to order the Board of Directors meeting for Oceana Community Service District, June 10th, 2009. Roll call, please.
President Mann?
Here.
Vice President Hill?
Here.
Director Dahl?
Here.
Director Dean?
Here.
Director Luthy?
Here.
Please join me in the salute tonight, please. Ready, again.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Public comment. Any member of the public may address the board on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of the board. The board will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the board cannot act on items not on the agenda. Is there any public comment? Public comment? Seeing none. Board member items for discussion. Anything, Pamela?
Nothing at this time.
Jim?
Nothing at this time. I'm just to inform everyone, I did call John Wallace, as you had mentioned, to see if he had possible suggestions for someone that might be able to fill a general manager position or interim general manager position. He gave a couple of names that I'll mention later.
Vern? Mary?
Nothing.
And I have nothing. Review and approval of the minutes. Everybody have a chance to read them.
I did. There were just a few spelling corrections, and I'll let Steph
know. Okay. Anybody else have anything in the minutes? Okay. Any comments from the public on the minutes? Seeing none.
I'll move that the minutes of May 27th be approved as amended by Director
Sergeant Steve Odom, and he is taking the place of Sergeant Steve Harris, who retired last month. So I wanted to bring him along and introduce so you'd know if he ever ends up having to take my place, who you're dealing with.
Welcome to
Oceana. A few things to tell you about this evening. On May 31st at about 4:42 in the evening, we had a fight occur in the 2100 block of Beach Street. We had six subjects involved in that fight, and while the deputies were en route, and I know this is shocking, the fight broke up and the subjects kind of scattered. Deputies were able to detain several of them who were involved at the scene. One of the subjects, Rudy Serta III, age 18, from San Luis Obispo, was arrested for public intoxication. After we finished the investigation, we determined that it appeared to be gang-related, so we did forward it up to our gang task force investigators to look into further. One note to tell you about: over Memorial Day weekend, we had six arrests for driving under the influence. Majority of those were in Oceano, and all six subjects were turned over to the Highway Patrol for processing. We had two vehicles keyed over the same weekend. One was in the 2400 block of Beach Street. The other one was over in Napomo, did some extensive damage to the paint on the vehicle, and unfortunately at this point we don't have any leads on that incident. We have had an increase in vehicle burglaries that have occurred both in Oceano and Napomo, and the apparently the new way that it's being dealt with is they're smashing the windows out of the vehicles and then taking normally the car stereo and any other loose miscellaneous belongings that are inside the vehicle. In one particular case, we were lucky enough to get fingerprints. And in another car, both of these in Oceano, a subject bled inside the vehicle after cutting himself, so we picked up some DNA evidence, which has been sent down to the lab for processing, see if we can come up with a match in our database. You never know. You might get lucky. We, on 6/2/09 at about 7 o'clock in the morning, discovered that someone had tried to break into the food bank building down on Railroad. An unknown color and make pickup truck with a stolen license plate on it that vandalized a vehicle in the parking lot in the 1400 block. The license plate, just so I can give it to you in case anybody sees it, rolling around, was 5 Paul Nora, or PNW Paul Nora William 834. So if anybody happens to see that license plate, please give us a call right away because it's apparently stolen out of the Hanford Coalinga area.
What were the first two numbers, Brian?
5, and then P as in Paul, N as in Nora, W as in William, 834.
Thank you.
And what kind of vehicle, again, was it seen on?
We're not sure. All we got was it was a dark-colored pickup truck. We don't know what kind it was. Actually, it's nice they got the license plate instead of the vehicle description. Usually it's the other way around. You know, and the license plate usually turns out to be more valuable for us. We had an incident over in Napomo on June 2nd of a subject impersonating a peace officer. He made a traffic stop on an unsuspecting citizen in the parking lot of the Carl's Jr. He was dressed in a black long-sleeve shirt and black slacks, and he had some sort of a cloth badge on. Unfortunately, the citizen handed him his wallet because the subject asked for his driver's license, and the guy took off and used the gentleman's credit card several times. So we're following up on that as we can to try to find out who it was. The vehicle description on that, in case anybody sees it, was a dark-colored Ford Explorer or Ford Excursion, and he had red and blue lights inside the cab on the dashboard. So, and the subject's described as a white male adult, 30 years old, 5'6" to 5'10", 170 to 200 pounds. So if anybody knows anything about this, we'd like to receive a phone call. And that's all I've got this evening, if anybody has any questions.
How's the graffiti?
It seems to be on the upswing right now. We've seen some more over in Napomo, and we actually had an incident down here behind the Rock and Roll Diner. I don't know if some of you might have seen that. Turned out that the subjects who did the graffiti painting were so intoxicated that they passed out right at the location, and we ended up with they all ended up pretty much going to jail for the most part.
Or are those the ones that were putting it in chalk first and then spraying in?
As a matter of fact, I think they were. Yeah. You know, you gotta make sure you get it just right, especially when you're heavily intoxicated. So, but we are seeing an increase in it. We'd like to have everybody report it to us as they find it. And then we're asking everybody, once we've documented it, paint over it as quickly as possible. I've got more paint than I know what to do with at our station, so if anybody needs paint, send them my way and I'll give them what they need. And we've got a bunch of different neutral colors to try to match the color scheme they're dealing with.
Are there any questions?
I have one question. There's a fence along the pike for a house. It's a house in Oceano, and it's been graffitied for a very long time, and it just... Is there a way that you can tell that person that you have paint and they could put it on there? Because it looks terrible.
Sure, if you can...
It really is a bad entrance to our community.
And it's on the pike.
It's on the pike, and it's on, what is it, on 20th, 21st, something like that. It's kind of an orangey-colored fence, and the rest of the house is well-kept and everything, but that looks terrible.
I'll take a look for it tomorrow and see if I can locate it and contact the owners, and maybe we can come to an agreement.
Yeah. Thanks.
Any other comments from the board?
Again, we very much thank you for all of the efforts on our behalf. A lot of these things sounds like things that people, as long as they're alert to their neighbor's property, if you hear the dog barking at something, go check it out and give you a call if there's some suspicious activity going on. Sounds like things that neighbors can help watch for vehicle burglaries and things of that nature. And
Absolutely, that's always a big help. That's the biggest help we can get, is to get those type of calls in a timely manner, and then we can go out and deal with the problem.
There's one more spot like that, graffiti next to the post office there.
Yes.
It's been up for quite a while now, too.
Yes, it has. And I was hoping that the property owners would paint over it, but I'm going to have to go have a talk with them as well. Hopefully we can get it taken care of.
Thank you.
Any comments or questions from the public? If not, well, thank you very much.
Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
And we appreciate your good work. Nice.
And that puts our total, as of this report, about 353. This time last year, we were at 312. We were ahead of last year. About where we were the year before.
So it averages 2.1 calls per day. On training, we continue their joint training with Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach. In May, we were concentrating on wildland firefighter safety, fire shelters, heat-related injuries, and progressive hose lays to practice for the upcoming fire season. Well, it's actually here. Three departments also hosted the wildland urban interface drill that was attended by numerous fire departments within the county. We did that right here in the South County. We hosted it this year. It's hosted every year around in different parts of the county. Tascadero's had it 1 year. Cambria had it last year. And it's real good training. There was a lot to put together. Our training chief, Chief Heath, was the one that headed it up, did a great job. We allowed the participants to train in structure protection, mobile fire attack, and water shuttle, the main things that we concentrated on. Under equipment, we had to replace a tire on our patrol, the damage to the bead, and it's becoming hard to get that tire because they changed the design, so we went and bought two of them to have one just in case we have to do it again so they all match. It was in danger of blowing out, and can't have that happen, so we went ahead and replaced it. The fire department completed the grant process for the 2009 AFG grant and submitted it, and is continuing to work on finalizing the 2008 assistance to firefighters grant that we got for our ventilation system. I'm to the point where I've got the request for proposals, I think, ready to go. We need to have someone look at it, or a couple people maybe look at it, make sure we've got it what we want, the way it reads. And we're close to completing purchasing all the items that were funded for the 08-09 fixed asset budget requests. We did receive our turnout lockers. We call them ready racks. They're on wheels out there. If you guys have seen them, they're to better store our turnouts, and also in conjunction with our ventilation system that we're getting. We couldn't have our old turnouts where they were at, hanging them on the wall. We may have to move our racks, so that's why we got these on wheels. We purchased
Jaws of Life.
Yes.
Any questions of Captain Bova from the board?
I have a question on the fireworks safety booth standards.
Mm-hmm.
Deal, would this be the appropriate time, or do it during board member items at the end of the meeting?
Why don't we go ahead and deal with that right now, John?
Fine.
Please.
Okay, I was just noticing that in one of the additional rules down here, that the fireworks that are stored off a site.
Okay, where are you at?
I gotta find the one I marked. Just a minute to find it. It's where they can't be outside of the Oceano. Okay, in no case should fireworks be transported out of the district of Oceano for nightly storage. This would be the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9th one,
yep.
Down or third one up.
Yeah, I see it.
Why are we putting that restriction on people?
This is in line with what Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach are using, and we it's mainly because of transporting the product.
Okay.
Back and forth constantly. What we'd like to see is them take it, if they're going to empty it out of their unit at night, that it goes straight into a C train, a fire safe container.
Okay, and why would we care if that is inside or outside of the district?
Transporting purposes is mainly.
As far as transporting through Oceano?
Mm-hmm. In a vehicle.
Okay, but we're requiring, are we requiring them to transport them outside of the booth at night anyway? So they're required to
transport. They are not required to take it outside of the booth at night.
Oh, okay.
If they take it outside of the booth at night, they are required to put it into a fire safe okay. container.
So they're allowed to transport it out of the booth at night into a
yes.
fire? Okay.
And so I strongly recommend already... that people do that. If they don't, they have to stay at the site. If they're going to leave them in the booth, they have to lock the booth and they have to stay at the site.
Okay. Yeah, otherwise they can transport them. So they already can transport them.
Not out of Oceano.
Taking them out of their booth and putting them into a container that would be right near the booth.
Oh, right near the booth.
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right.
I think most everybody usually has a C-Train or one fireworks people. They have bought a vehicle to put it in, and they don't take it away. They just have it.
Often people rent.
Took a lot from the other jurisdictions, again, trying to make everything, trying to get things as close to being the same as possible. And I think we want the board to look at that, and if the board approves it, then this will be given to the vendors for the fireworks.
It had become apparent over the last few years that there were a lot of questions and people weren't certain on what they were supposed to do and not allowed to do. And I felt that this would help guide them a little bit more. And it also, like I said, is more in line with what Aurora Grand and Grover Beach does, so we can all have the same set of guidelines.
One of the other changes in it was the hours of selling is, I believe, 9 to 9?
It's 9 to 9 now.
9 to 9, rather than... before it was, could sell 24 hours, I think.
Actually, we frowned on going past 10 o'clock, but now we've got it in writing, 9 to 9.
Yeah. Well, there were some, though, that were stayed open mm-hmm. way past mm-hmm. 10 o'clock at night.
And this way it keeps it fair. Everybody
yeah.
has the same hours of operation, and it's,
yeah.
and it's written down.
Right. I appreciate your putting that together because it's pretty inclusive. Mm-hmm. The rules that are in there are all based on safety, and they make sense. So, and having it all standardized, I think, is a great idea.
We're going to hold a meeting on the night of the 15th for the groups, and I believe they've been notified already. Is that correct?
Yeah.
For any number of the amount of people that are involved with those groups can come down, and we're going to go over this and make sure there's no questions.
A group could bring their whole team that is going to be selling fireworks for instructions. It isn't just not the one person that filled mm-hmm. out the application.
Right. Any other questions on the report?
Okay.
Welcome. Thank you.
Do we want to go ahead and tell John that he can... pass these out.
That was the recommendation of the
yeah.
fire committee, that we were very pleased with the result of his putting this pamphlet together. And we actually had people sitting in on the meeting asking questions, and they went away with the pamphlet, and I think that helped answer a lot of their mm-hmm. questions too. So, and I like the idea that it's standardized. So I think this is a good communication tool.
Okay, good.
Did you make a motion?
Oh, I move that we use the new fireworks pamphlet for our people who are selling fireworks in Oceano. So I move that we use it this year and continue to use it every year, and in fact, perhaps even put it in
abatement protest hearing. Gina?
This is the time when the residents of the community have an opportunity to voice any objection to having their lots abated. Sometimes people have things that are landscaping that we may not realize that's what it is. So this is the appropriate time to express those concerns.
The district has some of those too?
Pardon me?
The district has some of that landscaping also?
Absolutely, but ours is going.
Hopefully.
Just the stuff that's this high and dry.
Oh, okay. Is there anybody here in the public who would like to protest? Yes, sir. Please come to the microphone, your name and residence.
Hi, my name is Rich McElhinney. I live at 1322 20th Court in Oceano. And I basically just had a couple questions. I'm trying to avoid spending some money this year. My backyard is basically on the pike, and which is right across from the big ditch. And, of course, that gets posted every year for the last 25 years, which is understandable. But last year, my ground cover that's between me and another neighbor got cut. And I got charged, of course, the appropriate $45 for your contractor and another $45 for you guys. So this year, I'm trying to avoid that. It didn't sound like last year my front yard patch was even on the list, but somehow he determined that it needed to be cut. And that's how I got the assessment. So I'm here today to see if my front yard partition is on the list and whether I should just go ahead and mow it and try to avoid, you know, another $90 this year.
John, do you have the list there?
I have a list. And I have your property on the map here, and you and your next door neighbor.
Yeah, has that little
being identified, and it's primarily because of your slope that goes down onto the pike.
Yeah, on the backside, yes.
And I need to look, what I need to do right now is look up the photograph and see if the photograph is showing your front yard or your back.
My back I trimmed up a couple weeks ago. That should hopefully look pretty decent, but I'm concerned because my front patch between the two neighbors was also mowed, and like I say, that's where the
I'm not seeing it right in here. What we can do is I can find out in the morning for you, if that's okay, and we can...
Yeah, that'd be fine if you just, like, leave a note on my door or something like that. If you really think it needs to be whacked up. I mean, there's a few little squiggly weed shoots and some grass growing with the ground cover, but basically ground cover has been there for 25 years or so. But if it's considered weeds, then I'm trying to avoid the
it's,
money outlay.
Fire hazard reduction is technically what it is. Yeah. So if it's 4 inches tall and it's dry, and
this is green and have yellow flowers.
Okay. What was your address again? The house address?
1322.
Okay.
It's lot 50 there, right on the very center of the cul-de-sac.
I just want to make sure I know which one it is. I see it here a lot.
Yeah, because
there's two of them right next to each other.
Yeah, the neighbor across from you thinks that he lives on 20th Court also, because I get people coming to look for 20th Court, and whether it's a pizza delivery or the sheriff's office.
And I know.
And yeah, so it's been that way. You know, I put up with it because it's been that way for 25 or 30 years.
I have the same issue because I live on the street over.
So yeah. So.
And I'd love to see that something get changed there, but I don't know what.
But after all these years, it's probably too late to change numbering or designation.
Well, let me find out in the morning with Captain that identified this comes in, and we'll talk about it, and I'll go over there and look at it, and we'll see which...
Yeah,
if you just leave
a note this weekend, I'll you know, if I need to mow it down, I'll mow it all down. You know, just to
avoid. I'll let you know, and we're meeting with the contractor that's going to do all this weed abatement in the morning, tomorrow morning. So I will flag it for you and let him know that there may be an issue with that. So we'll go by and we'll look at it, and then I'll let you know.
Okay.
How can we contact you?
My cell phone is probably the easiest, 805-621-3317.
Okay.
And yeah, just let me know if you really think it needs to be cut. I'll rather cut it than
definitely
spend the money.
And your first name?
Rich.
Okay. Okay.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's like I say that it was the front yard that I was worried about. back when it's almost too obvious, it's a problem.
And you say last year that it got cut and it wasn't on the list last year?
That's the way I understood it wasn't on the list, because I came here for the meeting and you guys mentioned the back, which I expected, but it seemed to indicate that the front was not on the watch list or the cut list, but it was mowed, and that was what my assessment was for, the way I understand it.
Could you clear that up from last year for him, what it exactly was for, and if it was on the list or not?
Sure.
This could be a typo, but the APN number is correct. Your address is wrong on here, but the APN number is correct. So what I'll do is I'm going to flag that for the morning also. You're 1322.
22, yeah.
And it has 1332 on here. Oh. And I know that 1322 and 1317 are right next door to each other.
Yeah.
So 062-261-050 is your APN number.
Yeah, 50, yeah, lot 50 there.
So,
and I noticed my neighbor hasn't cut his, what we call the North 40 there, along the pike.
It is on the north side. Okay, we'll make the address correction. I'll meet with the contractor in the morning. We'll put a flag on your property so that he doesn't go over there immediately.
Okay, we'll I appreciate
it,
that.
And maybe I'll go with him and we'll look at it and we'll make a determination on it. On the front.
Yeah,
on the
front.
You say you've already trimmed.
Yeah, I've trimmed my my backyard.
And you
the
just
neighbor
don't want
has
your landscaping cut in the front.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, like I said, I'm trying to generate some ground cover that looks a little nicer than just weeds. So.
Yeah. And I'll meet with the captain that generated this, and I'm sure that I'm not sure. I doubt that he's targeting the front yard. I think he was targeting the back hill.
Yeah, which is obviously so understood. Yeah.
We'll make that clear.
Okay, great. Right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Mary, we're not abating ice plant, are
no.
we? It sounds like you have ice plant as a
on the north side. It's ice plant on the in my front yard. It's a small green, almost like a African violet, but it has a yellow daisy flower that comes up. But yeah, if it comes down to where this ground cover looks too much like a weed, maybe I'll try planting ice plant out in front instead. You get around it. I've been trying to get the ice plant on the north side there along the pike to spread out for years and years, and some years it's...
Any other comments from the public on this? Anything else from the board? Thank you for coming. Utility items, the cleaning and inspection of the district sewer and water lines. Back one more time. Who wants to deal with this?
Public comment.
Public comment on us dealing with the continued disclosure of the emergency due to the earthquake we had a number of years ago. Any comments from the public? Anything from the board?
Move that we continue the emergency.
I think we need to read the whole little thing, do we not, Jim?
Well, yeah, if I understand Vern's motion, is he moved that we continue the declaration of emergency following the San Simeon earthquake for cleaning and inspection of district sewer and water lines.
Yes.
Second.
This is a 4-5 vote. This is a roll call. Is that correct on this one?
Yes.
Roll call, please.
Director Dahl?
Yes.
Director Lucy?
Yes.
Vice President Hill?
Yes.
Director Dean?
Yes.
President Mann?
Yes. How many more years do we think we'll have this on there?
Well, at least until the mama takes her little baby owls out of the trees.
Oh, no. Oh. Oh, well, it'll be back again next month.
Be back again next year.
Actually, what we're doing at this point also is waiting for the county to receive the new contract, the amended contract from the state for the DRI funding for the final 5 segments.
We hope the state wouldn't decide that they wanted to keep that money.
We certainly hope not.
Yeah. Okay. Administrative items. If you could deal with this one, please, Alex, the property tax exchange for the annexation.
Yes, Madam President, members of the board, members of the public.
This item comes on to you in connection with the pending annexation of Halcyon Estates and Grandy Noble Manor. As you're aware, there was a negotiation for property tax exchange between the county and the district that was facilitated by LAFCO. I'm informed, although I don't know it for a fact myself, that yesterday the Board of Supervisors approved that issue tonight.
Come ahead.
Chuck Mullenberg, Grandy Noble Manor. First of all, I'd like to explain that it's pretty much unusual to co-insure a water district. Our insurance agent, who's been selling mobile home insurance policies for 30 years, said it's the first time he's ever been asked to co-insure a water district on this type of policy. The reason that Alex explained to us is because of the water wheeling agreement with Arroyo Grande. That's the reason it's required. Now, we have found the companies that we're with now, and I'm speaking for Halcyon Estates also because Jerry was unable to be here tonight. Neither of our policies, and I gave a letter to Alex from our insurance because we worked with them for quite a while to try to get them to bring you on as co-insured. They've absolutely refused to do it. They said it's, you know, putting responsibility on them and us that shouldn't be theirs. But our insurance agent has procured companies that will write the insurance for us. The premium, unfortunately, is quite a bit higher. So what we've got set up with our insurance agencies is to transfer insurance to these other policies. But they say that until you have an insurable interest, and that meaning all these contingencies have to be met in our contract, and we actually, you know, sign everything and pay our fees and everything, you don't have an insurable interest. It would be, you know, futile to try to. They can't add you on as additional insureds until that time. So everything's set up with our agents that when we get this thing finalized, we'll transfer policies to these other insurance companies, and at that time, you will be named as co-insured. And again, it's almost impossible to try to do it. It's like getting the cart before the horse. If you've ever bought a house, at the date of close of escrow is when your insurance goes into effect, and that's kind of the same thing here. That's when you become insured.
Well, then perhaps the day the insurance goes into effect would be the day that we would sign this agreement.
Okay, well, I understand that would hold up LAFCO signing because I thought they needed your approval before they will approve it.
They know that we want this insurance.
Okay. You're asking us to do something that's we can't co-insure you until.
Well,
and LAFCO stated that even once they approve this on the 18th, that it would take out $3,000. I've already budgeted for it. It's just that, you know, for one thing, why do we want to buy more expensive insurance until we need it? And number two, we can't. It wouldn't do you any good anyway because you don't have an insurable interest yet. So, I mean, if you want us to put up a deposit or if you want to make a conditional approval based on that insurance being in place when we make the final deal, that's fine. But I think it's very unreasonable for you to ask us to do something that we can't do.
Well, it isn't something that we haven't talked about from day one about the insurance.
Well, we've dealt with it from day one. We've had quite a bit of going back and forth even with our attorneys. And with my insurance agent, believe me, he's been working day and night trying to find a company that would even bring you on as co-insured. So that was quite an accomplishment just to get in a company. And there's a letter there stating that we can get that insurance that I gave Alex. So, you know, it's really, I mean, for all the other fees that we're done, insurance is kind of a minor thing anyway. I mean, as far as our expenses. But if you would like us to put up a deposit to cover that to make sure that it's paid, and we'd be willing to do something like that if that's what it takes, but we just can't get you co-insured until you have an insurable interest.
If it's I don't know if this will be of adequate comfort to the board, but under the agreement, the obligation to deliver water is contingent upon a whole long series of conditions being met, one of which is the delivery of the insurance policy. So you don't have to turn on the spigot until the insurance is in place, even though there may be other things between now and then that have to occur. I think as a practical matter, the only time period when the district has some risk?
Excuse me, I can't split my brain in half. Sorry.
The only time period that the district has some risk is what will probably be a very short window of a few days between the time the appeal period runs on the appeal of the LAFCO approval. That's the, I don't think it's 40, it's more like 30 days.
It was 30 days and an additional 10 days for
somebody. I'm not sure where the 10 comes from, so, but there's a 30-day period in there where somebody can appeal the LAFCO requirement. But there's a very narrow window of a few days in there where the district has some risk.
You talked about additional cost for a better plan.
Well, it's not a better plan. It's a plan. It's the only company that would co-insure you, because basically most of the insurance companies feel it's unfair to ask a park owner to insure. We're actually insuring you against almost anything that can happen that normally you would have liability for.
Yeah, so it's hard to get a mobile home insured, much less financed or anything.
We're talking about a park, not a mobile home.
Okay, so we're talking about real land. But my point being is, what is the cost difference? You said that there was more cost associated with the insurance company that is willing to do this. Because I kind of see this like as a business insurance. You know, you buy your business insurance and it kicks into effect the day you open your doors and start doing business,
exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
So I don't see why it's so complicated. I thought it was actually a minimal request when we asked to be put on the policy because of the risky water.
I don't mind the crest. It's just.
But I would like to know
what you're asking. We gave you a copy of the insurance that we have on the parks now, okay?
Uh-huh.
And we have to change those policies prior to us filing.
Correct. I understand the process.
But they cannot bring you on as additional insured until you have an insurable interest. And that insurable interest is created by our final negotiations when we give you the money and you actually have a document that we can send to the insurance company so that they can add you as additional insured.
So you made a statement that the new insurance will be an additional cost.
Yes.
I'd like to know the dollar amount on that additional cost.
Our insurance that I already paid in January for our park was about $2,600, $2,600. Now, the policy that he quoted me on with the new insurance, the original one was $3,600, but my agent is still looking, and he may have another company that can come in at around $3,100.
Okay.
So it's about, you know, the one that we know we have is about $1,000 a year more.
Okay. And Mr. Seamus, in the letter from the insurance company, did they commit to changing over or agreeing to add us after this process within the appeals timeline?
There is a fax from South California as soon as the annexation is completed and all the appeals have run.
Great. I have a question. I think I'd feel more comfortable if the insurance company that's going to take you on and us on too would say that they are willing to do this and this is their plan and this is what they're going to do, rather than just a quote from the company. Is there a way to get that before it goes to LAFCO and send it? Because if they commit to it in writing, and you know, I'm willing to take the risk of the few days if they can commit to that in writing. However, I don't think the quote is enough. I guess I would ask Alex if that's something you could do.
Well, the first page was a March 8th letter addressed to you from CIG saying that they would not cover it.
Well, there was two pages that I got from the new one.
Yeah, one of the pages was just basically a fax cover sheet.
Okay. On that cover sheet, didn't it say, though, that they would write the insurance?
Attaches the letter regarding insurance that would include the additional insured for Oceana Water District. Please let me know if you need any additional information.
Okay.
I thought the one, the cover letter would cover the fact that they, you know, agreed.
Well, essentially, they're both letters from the insurance agency saying that they believe they have found an insurance company. The broker is saying they believe they found an insurance company that will write the policy.
The operative word is believe.
Yeah.
You say our liability starts once we turn the water on? Or before?
No, once you become legally obligated to serve them, which is when the annexation is completed.
Well, once we have everybody's approval, we would be willing to go ahead and secure this insurance. But, you know, until we don't know what LAFCO's going to say for sure, we hate to go out and spend, write new policies and spend that. So maybe what we can do is once LAFCO approves it, I think we'd both be willing to go ahead and get this insurance started. However, they would not be able to add you as additional insured until everything was complete.
Perhaps
so you wouldn't have that document until then.
What if we did this? Once LAFCO approves it, you initiate the policy with a commencement date on whatever the calculated end of the appeal period is.
Okay.
With LAFCO, they should be able to issue what's called an interim
escrow policy or something to make
well,
it work.
They would just write the policy with a start date in the future, mm-hmm. and then if something falls off the tracks, we can unwind that in that last couple of days.
And it goes to LAFCO on the 18th?
The 18th.
Okay. Yes, it does. Pleasure of the board. Any comment? Well, let's see if anybody else in the public has anything to say. Not bring it back to the board for discussion.
I think that Alex's proposed resolution is reasonable, and it seems to get everybody out of the box of carts and horses. And I would be willing to support, given that an interim binder could be provided that guarantees the district will be protected from the end of the LAFCO appeal period.
I'd be willing to do that, too. I've been in a position where you couldn't do it one way and you couldn't do it the other way, and you're stuck in the middle and everybody's fighting over you. I think this gives me enough comfort that I feel that this will work, and I think we can go ahead with it. I'm hoping, Barbara, that it will give you enough comfort too.
No, it doesn't. But I'm only one out of five of you.
But you have to be the LAFCO board member too, who has
a
different hat.
Oh yes, but I have a different hat there. There, I'm only looking after LAFCO's interests, not our interests. Mm-hmm. There's a motion on the floor with a second?
Is there?
Not yet.
Oh, I thought you had made a motion. Excuse me.
No, I will move that we adopt OCSD Resolution 2009-3, a resolution accepting the negotiated exchange of property tax revenue and annual tax increment between the County of San Luis Obispo and OCSD.
I second that motion.
Any further discussion on the board? Roll call, please.
Vice President Hill?
Yes.
Director Dean?
Yes.
Director Dahl?
Yes.
Director Luthy?
Yes.
President Mann?
No. It carries 4-1. Declaration of financial crisis in the community of Oceano.
With OCSD.
Would you like the whole thing read, Mary, or?
Well, I guess I'm somewhat confused. Now, is this a different resolution that's been requested from OCSDA? Or is this the resolution that we worked out on 329?
This is the resolution that is the result of the last election held recently, and this is the one now where all the special districts and the League of California Cities and the counties are getting together and doing a written campaign.
Okay, so this is a form letter resolution.
No, it's being tailored to OCSD, and we've tried to incorporate some of the points that were in the March proposed resolution.
Well, this is kind of how I feel about this, because I have read it right. And besides being edited down, you know, because I had like 35 whereases, and I think we had edited down to 5, that shows that we're in fiscal crisis, that I see OCSD, A, as kind of on the late freight, that we did this 3 months ago. And so I think it's fine that we sign their letter, but I would actually like to forward on our resolution with the cover letter saying, you know, that, you know, it's good that you're doing this now, but Oceano did it 3 months ago.
I think part of the issue is when your resolution was introduced, it was going to be formalized and brought back to the board.
And it didn't.
And it hasn't come back.
So was it stuck on somebody's desk or?
I think.
Dropped between the cracks?
No.
Thrown under old business? Under the bus?
My recollection was that we passed that.
That was my understanding, too, that we picked out 5 or 6 points and it was passed.
The resolution wasn't.
And I also brought it up with the interim GM at the time that it does absolutely no good to sit on the corner of a desk, you know, just collecting dust. You know, let's.
No resolution.
I feel like we did this work in March and it's just being thrown out the window because a bigger, badder organization sent a form letter. You know, so I don't really know how to take it. You know, I kind of feel like, well, why did I do all this research? Why did I do all this work? Why did I, you know, try to make the argument that Oceano is in a horrific economic crisis for what? So somebody who has a bigger mailing list than us can send us a form letter and say, sign on, and it gets attention, where it took me 3 months to get the darn thing on the agenda. This form letter made it on in a heartbeat. So yeah, I support signing the form letter, but I also support sending the original created resolution that this body created, along with a letter stating that we're glad to see that they have decided to get on board. You could say it nicer than that.
Seems to me that since we've already approved the resolution, in my recollection, we can check the minutes to make sure that's accurate. Effectively doing the same thing, that probably sending our earlier resolution along as an attachment would be appropriate. We have a letter here to propose to Assemblyman Blakesley to be signed by the president of this board. I would say that all of the directors probably should sign on to the letter to emphasize the importance that we place on it, and then send that to Assemblyman Blakesley. I'd send a similar one to the governor and to Senator Maldonado.
Right, there is an attachment to the resolution that lists the other people that it would be sent to.
And also Congresswoman Capps.
I'd also like to send it to this assembly member, Anna Caballero from Salina. She's on the special district.
Even a so little press
attention.
Release.
And so that they know, we know that we were going to have problems with this way before.
Yeah.
You know, it takes government agencies and larger agencies longer to respond, which is why we're here. And we were trying to respond and be proactive. And, of course, we can't always foresee what comes, but you foresaw what was coming down the pike, I think, in this case. So I'd like to send it to Anna Caballero, along with maybe some pictures of what Oceano is like and what we're trying to do here. And I think maybe we should have a packet that we could send out to people with. I guess we can be our own PR people, or we'll have to be our own PR
people.
Well,
we have to
be. Because it should be easy.
Because, you know, the next week I read about three districts who declared a fiscal state of emergency, and we were not listed as one of them.
We got in the papers, though, for this one. The Tribune did note that we were reviewing this, but they didn't note yours.
No, because nobody let them know.
It doesn't count. Well, they do get the agendas.
Yeah.
The one thing that I think the only thing we're threatened with losing is our fire money, because they don't give us any money for anything else. It's the 8% of our tax revenue. That's what we're in the letter we talk about that.
Well, I would make this letter stronger in the last paragraph where it says the loss of 8% of the property taxes could be devastating. It would be devastating.
Yeah.
There's no question about it.
Yeah.
Yes.
It directly would impact our fire department and probably eliminate our ability to provide street lighting, which is critical to the safety and health of the public.
Because we got some old-timers banking on that street light right now.
This is something that would be devastating to the district. It's would be adverse to the health and welfare of our citizens, and we need to strongly oppose it.
You know, maybe take a picture of our three firefighters. This is our fire department. Are you intending to?
This is our fire department, and they're standing in front of our how-many-year-old fire truck now.
Do you mind if we pick on you a little bit there to save your money, to save the money?
And I would think that Captain Boba could also come up with some action
photographs
of the department.
So we can perhaps make this letter a little stronger.
Is this letter a suggested form that came down as well?
Pardon me?
No.
Is this letter a suggested form that came down?
Just the first two paragraphs that explain.
What was the little phrase we had before? The last time they tried to take money, keep our money at home. What were those buttons we had? Do you remember? You might be the only one that was around.
Yeah, I don't
when they know. Tried to take our money before, and they didn't take any from us because of the fire district.
Yeah, well, we're talking public safety for where all our money goes.
Yeah.
And it's a scary prospect.
So if we could make this letter a little stronger, and Jim would like everybody to sign it.
Certainly.
I'm certainly agreeable to that. And if perhaps you can find the resolution maybe in Kevin's things.
We certainly will find it.
Well, is there a downside to passing this resolution as well as having the other one passed? I don't see one. And as a matter of fact, if we pass this one and then send the other one along with it, it just reinforces this one.
Yeah, that's.
So I don't see a downside to passing this one as well. And it puts us with the same voice, which is a much stronger voice with all the other CSDs.
Do we want to wait to the next meeting to pass them both the same date? Or do we want to pass this one now? And will we have, you think the resolution was passed the last time? I thought it was talked about and agreed upon, but there was no written resolution, I don't think.
I thought it was passed.
Was there a written resolution at that time? We said what we wanted in it.
I think there was. I remember that the meeting was when...
There's only been four resolutions in 2009. One of them was the mobile home park one you just did.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is the one you just adopted. What were the first two?
Maybe we could...
weed abatement?
Yeah. And fireworks?
Well, we had a... I remember it was a 5-0 vote, and Ryan was here at the time.
Yeah, because we talked about... Mary had
however many things on it, and we weeded them down, and we talked about what we wanted on it, and we all agreed that that would
take a break and see if we can look and see what the status of this is.
This has been temporarily tabled.
Okay, and just one more question. This is coming from the CSDA?
CSDA is leading.
Leading, okay.
Right.
And they're going to present them in Sacramento, I imagine, at some certain date?
CSDA as an entity will have a presentation, but all the individual districts, cities, and counties are doing it on their own and sending them straight to Sacramento.
Okay. All right. And do you have any idea what their timeline is?
No. Not off the top of my head.
Okay. All right.
This is also being supported by the firefighters associations statewide, the police.
Mm-hmm.
As many people as we can get to comment on it, the better, because the property taxes are the only thing that we have for street lighting and for fire. Mm-hmm.
Maybe we should just take a 5-minute break now and see if you can find that now and finish this rather than table it and come back to it.
That sounds good to me.
Kevin had it when he sent out the call for grant writers. He sent them that resolution as well.
We have a 5-minute break now.
As an outline.
Continuing the discussion on the state of emergency. We do have the minutes from March 25th, 2009, where the board approved a declaring of state of emergency for the following five reasons. However, we did not do a resolution at that time. But I would think, though, we did certainly recognize and declare that we have a state of an emergency.
One way we might proceed is to add a sentence to the proposed letter to Assemblyman Blakesley. After the first sentence, add in OCSD declared, or Oceana Community Services District, declared a local financial emergency on March 25th, 2009 due to the extremely adverse financial system facing the district. Then in the second paragraph, however suspending Prop 1A and taking even temporarily, I believe the figure is 8% of special districts property tax revenue with force cuts. And approve the letter with perhaps that modification and approve the suggested resolution.
And do we want to attach a copy of the five reasons?
We can certainly do that.
Is everybody a... That would be on page 5, I think. We would list the... We would have an attachment, maybe saying March 25th, 2009, and that
that first paragraph there. Or, yeah.
But we can't say it's a resolution.
No,
during
no.
The state of emergency, but
yeah.
We recognized it
yeah.
As a state of emergency
yeah.
For the following 5 reasons. Yeah, I'm fine for doing that.
Well, we declared it a state of emergency, but not by resolution, but
right.
By motion.
Yes.
Didn't quite get through that part of it.
Do you agree with the, this?
So I would move that we adopt the OCSD resolution 2009-4, finding that severe financial hardship will exist if additional local property tax revenues are seized and additional unfunded mandates are adopted by the state of California. I also wish yes.
Turn it on.
Thank you, Alex.
Thank you. I usually don't shut them off. Okay, I will move this again. I will move that OCSD adopt the resolution 2009-4, finding a severe financial hardship will exist if additional local property tax revenues are seized and additional unfunded mandates are adopted by the state of California. I further move that in the letter that goes along or transmits this resolution, that we include the special language that says in the first page, first paragraph, that OCSD declared a local financial emergency on March 25, 2009, due to the extremely adverse financial situation facing the district, and that we attach the 5 reasons that we use for the declaration of the emergency to that letter, and that these letters be sent to our assembly persons listed on the back of the page, including Chair of the Assembly Local Government Committee, Anna Caballero.
I'll second that.
Any discussion? Yes, Mary.
Did we include our board of supervisor in that list? I think it's always good to let that person know what we're doing.
Certainly. So amended the motion
yeah.
To include
so
the
I
board
add,
of supervisors.
Amendment that supervisor.
Okay. I amend the motion to include.
I'll continue
voting.
The second.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Is this a roll call? No. Yes. It should
resolution.
Maybe be a roll call. Roll call, please.
Director Dean?
Yes.
Vice President Hill?
Yes.
Director Dahl?
Yes.
Director Lucy?
Yes.
President Mann?
Yes. Okay. Taking care of that.
Can you state your name clearly for the record?
Pamela Dean, Oceano resident, and I do have to make one adjustment over here on the board.
Do you need an assistant?
She needs a Vanna.
I'm changing my presentation because I think everybody needs maybe a little bit of background on this. I own a lot in Oceano, and I subdivided that lot back in 2005. I'm not sure the exact dates, but so I started. I built a house on lot number one, and it was the subject of the fee letter that I have attached to your submittal, and that fee letter was for March 18th, 2005. And every time you finish or come close to finishing a building, you ask for new or updated fee letter. So I had a fee letter on file for lot number two, and it was dated May 15th, 2007. And I requested an update for that fee letter and got it on May 7th, 2009. And that's because I'm
just about finished. I tell you, it takes a long time. If two of you are building a house, it takes forever. So it took us about 2 years to get to this stage where I'm ready to call for my final inspection, but I need water, and water comes from Oceano. And I really want you to look at the fee letters carefully, because I'm not understanding how the fee letter was computed, and that's why I'm before the board. The new fee letter on May 9th delivered to me on May 14th, I'm disputing that because I believe it's improperly calculated.
Excuse me, Pamela. When you're saying the dates, could you add the year just so when somebody's
okay.
looking at this later?
Why don't you show us a sample?
Your sample is in your packet. Did you get a sample of that in your packet? If not, I probably have an extra.
Oh, yes, I have.
Yes. So the fee, the expensive, by $3,000 or $4,000. My original fee letter is the one of March 18th, 2005, that applies to lot number one. So I think the May 9th, 2009 was improperly calculated. You will notice my original fee letter dated May 15th, 2007 is different from the new one dated May 9th, 2009. The original letter was calculated properly using the 2006 ordinance. Although the calculations are correct in the May 15th, 2007 letter, the descriptions of the components of the fees are not. And let me further explain this. It makes for confusion when you're trying to figure out what your fees are for. So the 2006-1 ordinances are the prevailing ordinances, and they use these terms. For fee letter, we use different terms. So our fee letter terms say water meter charge. OCSD ordinance terms say meter installation charge, and that's ordinance section article 2, number 4. And the associated fee for my 5/8 inch meter is $675. The fee letter says front footage charge. OCSD ordinance terms say front footage charge. That is article 2, number 4. Also, it's included with the meter there. And the minimum charge is $40.80. The Lopez project improvement charge is actually called additional connection fees in OCSD ordinance terms. That is article 2, number 5A, and that runs $1,000 for each meter. And the state water project fees that are the fee letter terms are actually called capacity charges in the OCSD ordinance terms. And that ordinance section is article 2, number 6. The associated fee, it is calculated and goes up January 1st of every year, is $36.62.88 for this year. That is the part of my $7,017.60. And as of March 8th, the only ordinance we have in effect is the one establishing water service charges by 2006-1. At the very end of your packet there is a page that says 1989 policy written by Bill Senna. And this is what I was given as the way to compute my front footage fees. It's taken the square root of my square footage of lot number 2 and multiplied it times 8160 a lineal foot. It's crazy. It shouldn't be in use. And that's why I gave you all of the 2006 ordinances, because they say, to consolidate, this was to consolidate the existing water ordinances into one, that's emphasis added, one ordinance for convenience and clarity. The district will benefit from a more organized ordinance placing all water-related charges in one location. And Article 1, Paragraph 3 says, on page 2, all service of water by the district shall be made in accordance with the following rules and regulations. And then Article 10 refers to inconsistency. To the extent that the terms or provisions of this ordinance may be inconsistent with or in a conflict with the terms and conditions of any prior district ordinances, motions, resolutions, rules, or regulations governing the same subject, the terms and conditions of this ordinance shall prevail with respect to the subject matter thereof, and such inconsistency and conflicting provisions or prior ordinances, motions, resolutions, rules, and regulations are hereby repealed. So the documentation provided me about the 1989 policy. It was actually written by Bill Senna. Didn't make sense to me. And since I wrote this letter, I have been looking into fee letters because we're working on codification of both water and sewer right now. This one I paid
was the 94, what you have written down there?
Now you have to remember the May 15th, 2007 was an expected, what I would expect to pay on in 2007, but I didn't finish the house in time. So that particular fee goes up by the calculation on the last part of your letter.
Okay, so you had to pay a little more.
I had to pay a little bit more.
Okay.
And it went up by 143.64 times 2.
Okay, because of the time it took you to
yes.
get it done. And so then you're, correct me if you're wrong, so now you're saying for house number 2, you should be paying 941788.
Well, I thought so until I looked at my original payment for lot number 1. And this is where I'm confused, because my original payment for lot number 1, the front footage charge was not the minimum. I paid double. I paid double the minimum charge for the front footage on lot number 2.
So you
so what I'm saying is what I my front footage is 104 feet. Most other of the fee letters examples I gave you there show a 50-foot minimum of 40-80. And that's what my fee letter of May 15th, 2007 said.
Was based on the smaller lot?
Now, this is what is front footage based on? My understanding is front footage is the sewer transmission line in the street.
The sewer or the water transmission?
The water transmission line. The water transmission line in the street that serves your parcels. So my water transmission line in the street is 104 feet long. I have
long,
a
long, not width.
Long, not width. Because
so when they're saying frontage, it seems to frontage to me indicates width.
Well,
not,
it's the,
not length.
Well, it's the
length.
Dimension along
oh.
the side that has the water line.
Oh, okay.
Right. Whether that's
yeah.
wide or
yeah, okay.
And right. mine is because I have this weird lot that goes up like that called a flag lot. My frontage is the 104 feet. Looks like to me. I've already paid the minimum for lot 1 and lot 2 before I got this fee letter. And I'm not sure how we deal with this. We're looking in...
You did lot 1. You paid for lot 1.
I paid 104 feet frontage charge.
And so that went from lot 1 to... Show me that.
This is my frontage. These are, I have three.
Oh, okay, so cross the front of the house.
This is the frontage.
Okay.
This is the pink house.
Yeah.
This is the two stores. I've already put all my water lines in here and my sewer lines in there, in the private driveway.
So, I guess I need the board's decision on how to deal with this, because it's like I look for examples in fee letters and I'm getting confused. It looks like I've paid for lot number one and lot number two in the regular way that most people pay for them, because I've already paid for two full front footages. If we go with the computation as depicted using the square root of the square footage and multiplying it, I'll essentially be paying for almost six lots of front footage. And I don't think that's fair. Especially since I put my own infrastructure in to take the water to the houses. So, and I don't like using a 1989 policy that should be gone.
Just bear with me, because I'm a little slow on things like this. So when we're looking at other things to compare with, we should only be looking at flag lots, right? Because you have a flag lot. So if we were looking at others to see how they got charged, say a flag lot usually maybe has three, a PUD has three on it.
Well, a PUD is different than a flag lot. A PUD is not the same. I've got single-family residences on flag lots. There's a couple along Wilmar that are maybe have two houses
on
flag lot.
Okay, well, all right, I'll take the example. Across the street from me, there are four houses just built. How many times did they pay for the front footage on that property?
That is a PUD.
Oh.
And I'm,
the whole cost of the service. If your lot happens to be 104 foot along the street, then it seems to me the front footage should be 104 times the cost of,
well, whatever the ordinance rate says.
Whatever the rate is established in the ordinance, yeah. That's right. And how that's apportioned among the various lots maybe spelled out in the ordinance, but I'm very concerned about the idea of using some trigonometric or some other bizarre calculation to come up with a linear measure. Specifically, I'm very concerned with the idea of using the square root of the square footage.
Well, that's how it used to be done prior to this ordinance.
I don't know that that's the case. I do see the letter from Bill Fenna stating that it should be done that way. I have real heartburn about trying to impose some kind of an area, which speaks to me to volume and capacity, rather than linear footage, which is what the front footage is supposed to compensate. It's not a volume charge. It's not an area charge. The linear footage charge.
Right.
Let's go back to just simple layman language like mine.
Okay.
If it goes, you ran that across there, you paid one time for the frontage.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When you built the second house or the third house, you don't have to do anything else to that frontage, right?
No.
It doesn't get a bigger pipe or nothing changes.
No, the frontage is the same, and all three of my my meters and all three of the water, not meters, but one meter and two repositories for a meter are put in, plus the lines that go to the house, the water lines that go to the house.
So
there's
those
no
get,
additional any capacity.
Yeah, that's not, but
yeah,
we're not talking so, capacity charge here.
Yeah, I mean,
no.
So
right.
It's just, you only put that in there one time.
Right. The line's in there one time. Yeah.
That's what I was trying to get at.
Yes.
And I'm supposed to pay my fair share of it, which I agree with. Yes.
Yeah. Gina's got a question, or
I'm confused now. The fee letter that's dated May 15, 2007,
mm-hmm.
that shows the front footage charge being
this recent ordinance.
So
even
the minimum.
If it was there.
Well, we haven't written the recent.
you paid the minimum of 50 feet, right?
No, on my first lot, I paid 104 feet.
Oh, okay.
Paid for 104 feet.
You did pay for the 104
feet. I paid the full length, which I thought was reasonable. I thought I should pay for the full length.
And how much did you, how many dollars?
That was back before it changed to the 8160, so I paid $832 for $8 a linear foot for 104 feet. So I did my first house before the change in the ordinance, and it changed in 2006. And this I did a year before it changed. But I'm still working on the same project. It's just taking me, I guess you could say, forever.
I think Napomo splits it a third, and a third on something like this.
Other jurisdictions do the same.
But I don't, I mean, you know, I don't know. You know, I've read through this, and I don't know exactly how to interpret it, but it looks to me like the front footage for this has been paid for. So I don't know how to... You know, in the first lot, it's been paid for. So I don't know how to interpret it myself. I don't. That's what I'm saying here.
You paid $800 and some for the front footage the first time.
$832. Yeah, and I thought that was. I thought because I paid the front footage, it was for the whole front footage. And
okay, and so say pretend you know you didn't do that. Then you're just doing it now. It would cost you $4,080.
Yes, it would. It would. Because of the ordinance change. The fee changed in the ordinance of 2006-1. The front footage changed. The linear foot rate changed to 8160 a linear foot versus 8.
But if you have 104 linear feet, that would be $8,486.40. That wouldn't be the minimum. The minimum is based on 50 feet.
50 foot, yeah.
It is 50 foot, yes. The minimum is 50 foot, and that seems to be what is used on all the fee letters is the minimum, even if the frontage is more.
Subject to reconciliation when they actually come in to pay the fees.
Well, actually not. It's usually a minimum. So that's another little... That's why we're doing codification of ordinances. And
that makes no sense.
Well, now that costs $180. Are we saying we're going to charge them the other $120 to bring it up to what it would be if they were just doing it at the time they did the second house?
Again, the purpose of the front footage fee is to pay for linear
one-time
installation
change.
Of
yeah.
the utility
okay.
service. That's yeah. already a done deal,
yeah,
so it's
then,
not.
So then we don't. Then we. Wouldn't be looking to say, well, you still owe X dollars to bring it up to the current rate.
Yeah, and that seems to be what's done with other parcels that are multiple, like a multiple subdivision with various lots that have, they don't escalate those. They pay them when they get their permit.
The proposition that you just proposed certainly has a lot of logic to it, it may well be that that's what the district's forced to live with in connection with this particular situation.
Oh, I wasn't suggesting that. I was just asking a question.
But I did want to caution you, and Phil might be able to say more about this than I ever could, but sometimes the costs associated with that front footage fee, the things that are calculated into it, isn't just the cost of the infrastructure immediately in front of the curb line. There's also buried in it infrastructure that's located in other places. And as infrastructure gets added and costs go up, that's why those fees get adjusted. So I know in some jurisdictions in a situation like this, what they would do is they would require you to front load and pay the whole front footage fee at whatever the rate was at that time for the first lot, and then you would pay a prorated increase to cover any increases in the fees when you came back and got subsequent permits later on. I'm not sure we have the authority to do that under the ordinance as adopted, but I know that some jurisdictions will do it that way.
I thought that was when it was something added, a tail or something added on. I probably got the wrong word. Yes, Mary.
I just need clarification, lots of it. So if I look at the May 15, 07 letter, right?
Mm-hmm.
It says you're
shown in any of our ordinance. Our ordinance of 2006-1 has only one method to determine it. It's linear feet times 8160 a foot after 2006.
And I think I'm prepared to go on the record and say using the 1989 policy is clearly wrong.
So the 89 policy was used in the 09 letter.
That seems to be.
Right.
What policy was used in the 07 letter?
But she's already paid it.
Because it's already paid it. Obviously different.
She only paid it.
The 07 letter.
There is no 2006 policy.
The 07 letter.
Is there?
Yes.
Yeah, I've showed it to you already.
Yes, there is.
You have it. I tabbed it for you.
206-1.
The 07 letter appears to be based upon the 2006 ordinance using the minimum number of linear feet charge. The minimum number of linear feet charge is basically 50 feet at 8160 per linear foot. In fact, this subdivision has more footage than that. It's got 104 feet.
I guess my concerns with this issue is, first of all, with the first lot, it looks like the entire 104-foot front footage was paid for at the rates then current with the district. Other jurisdictions probably would, if subsequent lots were built as Ms. Dean's property is laid out, with either a flag lot or additional lots behind on the same front footage, essentially, let's say it was done by different developers, I think that the districts involved would probably collect the minimum front footage from the other lot developers and then probably prorate some kind of a refund back to the person who's paid the full front footage on that property anyway. It also seems to me that the front footage is a fee that's established by the district based on the reasonable cost of initial installation of the infrastructure. And while I'm sensitive to Alex's point that, well, someplace else in town, we may be putting in newer stuff and it may cost more, again, it's a linear dimension and ought to be calculated in terms of linear footage. And I could demonstrate, given a moment to draw on the board, that if you have three different lots, one of them is square in shape, the other one is very long but narrow, and the other one is narrow but very deep, you'd get all three lots having the exact same square footage. Every one of them would pay a different amount they'd pay the same amount, actually, in terms of the square root of the square footage, because the square footage would all be the same. But in each case, the front footage charge would be the same amount for different lengths of footage. And that's, again, very troubling to me. And you can also demonstrate that by doing that calculation using three different lot shapes, that the amount collected would be insufficient to pay for the actual cost of the infrastructure. So any way you look at trying to charge the square root of the square footage makes no sense.
When I look at this and I, you agree that the meter installation charge is a fair charge?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the additional connection fees are fair charge, $1,000?
Yes.
And the capacity charges are fair to $3,000?
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me that you've already paid for the front footage
last time around. So.
Yeah, and so. I didn't realize. I just thought it was normal. I'd pay for the whole thing. So.
So I may be totally wrong, and I'm sure that I'll get corrected if I'm not. But I would just think you would just owe those three items, not the front footage charge, because you have already paid that the first time around.
Well, that was what I thought, too, but, you know, we're redoing the codes, and I want to get everybody's kind of buy-in, because this is getting very complicated.
Well, we can't go back. I don't think we can't go back and look at everything, no. Every lot that's been done up until this time, but right now you're ready to
pay. I'm ready to go, yeah.
And then whatever's done after this, you ought to... Thank you.
Okay. Well, the problem came up, you know, obviously many years ago, that hey, if a guy comes in and buys a 5 lot, he doesn't have to pay any front footage charge. You know, because he only has 10 foot of front footage. So then we made it a minimum because of all these condo, what do you call them?
BUDs.
Mm-hmm. You know, those are small lots. And so that's why we had a minimum charge of whatever it is, $4,080. But I've used that calculation for 20 years, is all I can say, on other developers.
You don't use the 89?
The 89? See, when you get new regulations, about 2 weeks later, you find that, hey, this isn't covered. You know, no matter how many regulations we make, just a little while we'll find, oh, we've got this case.
Does anybody else have those policies that you use?
Anybody else?
Like the board or the codification committees or anything like that?
Are you talking about the district policies binder?
Well, he's saying he's using a set of rules for the last 20 years.
Right.
What and I'm asking, does anybody have those rules besides Phil?
Yeah. Policy binders?
Right.
What's the other book?
This is the policy book where when the first ordinances were done in the early 80s, we had a very basic outline of how things should be paid and how you calculated right. things. And they left it at the discretion of the general manager when things like this came up. And from that moment forward, whichever general manager happened to be in effect wrote these policies for staff to be able to use and apply on a consistent basis.
But does anybody else have them besides, say, you know, anybody who's building? Anybody who knows what to expect on the fees?
No, the only time that it would be presented to them is when they ask for the fees. If they asked how it was calculated, a copy would be given to them.
Director Lucy,
what would be given to them? The 89 version or the 76 version?
Ideally, it would have been a copy of the ordinance and then the policy that went
for when the 2006 ordinance was adopted, not taking into consideration this 1989 policy and feathering it in someplace. But the fact of the matter is, the 2006 ordinance is the law of the land.
Right.
And I think that's pretty well what we're stuck with. Maybe it wasn't communicated to staff well enough, or maybe the way the ordinance was written should have been done a different way. But the ordinance is the ordinance.
So what Phil's been using for 20-some-odd years is not right.
Well, the ordinance has only been in effect since 2006.
Well, he said, his exact words were, I've been using this for 20-some-odd years.
It may well be that under the ordinances of the district that existed before Ordinance 2006-1, what he was doing was absolutely 100% appropriate. I'm not prepared to issue an opinion on that. But I think since the 2006 ordinance was issued, it should have been done in accordance with the section that Director Dean cited here. Well, I don't think there's much doubt about that either.
Well, I'm just trying to all get on the same page here. And if
I know it hasn't been 20 years since 06. So does
the
Bill...
The 20 years is prior to 06.
Well, the policy
it's
that...
Bill just said he's not using the 06 right now. He's using the same old calculation he's used for the last 20 years.
Yeah, and Alex went over that maybe that we didn't get the 2006 communicated well enough to staff to realize that that's what it should be from 2006 on. And that's what's happening. Prior to 2006, that's how everyone understood that it was to be done. But as of 2006, it's...
Okay, well, that's not what Phil said. But that's fine. Can I ask another question, too? Is on the sewer connection charges, I see that there's material equipment and labor.
Yes, that's how much labor and equipment and materials to put in the property line down that easement that goes in?
We just put it in from the street to the property line.
From the street to the property line. And if no matter how many developments are on those lots,
well,
they're all the same $995.16.
The actual costs are.
So since I put my own line in, I wouldn't be charged this.
No, you're not allowed to go into the public right away. This is from the sewer main.
Yes.
To your property line.
Yes.
Once it hits your property line, then you're paying all the costs from there.
Yes.
So you're not in the middle of the street putting in the line.
So
the district
it
is.
Would apply to 100% of the development.
But not at this dollar amount.
But not at this dollar amount. Because the cost on each project is different.
So the cost on each project is different. I recognize that. Most of the streets in the district are two-lane streets. But let's say you had a six-lane street and the sewer was in the middle of the street. So instead of going over one traffic lane to get to the property line, you'd have to go over three traffic lanes to get to the property line. The distance would be three times.
Or you could have a two-lane street and the sewer's not right in the middle. It might be on the far side of the street, or it might be on the near side of the street.
And the other variable that we find a lot is if it requires float rock because of the water level. Changes it too.
I'd like to interject something. Please look at my March 18th, 2005 fee letter. On that lot, I had to put all my infrastructure in on that lot, and I put three sewer laterals in at that point. So I thought I was paying all the sewer lateral fees with that $1,000, and that I would have sewer connection fees, the $500, each time I connected it in. Plus, I have to go to the sand district and pay them $2,500. So I thought I had paid the fees to do that. It doesn't say. What's troubling me also is all of our sewer ordinances, the only time it talks about connection fees, sewer connection fees, is in the 1984-1 ordinance, and it just says $500. And we're probably way undercharging for sewer connection fees that we're going to have to look at in our rates. But we haven't changed.
You're offering to pay some more of those now?
Well, I think Director Ms. Dean brings up a good point, is that it's incumbent on the board to, considering inflation and cost of construction over the years, to...
When she did lot one. Now she's doing lot two. Does she have to pay that front footage again? That's what I'm asking.
Without categorically stating it, I think the answer is probably no, she doesn't. I'm not 100% certain, but I think
so. In
that's
other words, like
answer.
What I thought, just the three items.
Yeah.
Was there another driveway for the older house on that lot, or is that a new easement they put in?
The older house used to use the OCSD private driveway because they were one and the same at one time. Actually, it used to be Phil's old house is up there, the one that's way back. And then it was a water office. And so it was quite interesting. I had a water pressure valve in my kitchen, so I could always tell what the pressure of the tanks was. So I used to use the OCSD driveway to get to the house. And the old house still does. But I have the option now for any new development to go up the driveway. So that's why the driveway's so.
I think the point taken is that when we're doing codification and so forth, that it's incumbent on the board to consider things like flag lots, which are exceptionally common, and PUDs, which these days are becoming more common, and provide adequate direction to the staff for how to handle different things like that. I don't think it's a matter of good policy to have, you know, some general manager swim dictating how fees to the district are charged and assessed. I think it should be part of our ordinances that establish the fees and charges.
Well, resolutions, all of them state that if it's not covered, it's up, has to be determined by the general manager. Mm-hmm.
And that's what's made it difficult for staff, because there are these set of policies that we've been going by, but they don't tie necessarily to what the letter of the ordinance was requesting be done.
Mm-hmm. We haven't mentioned the Administrative Procedures Manual. I use that from calculated fees. I got to get out about 4 or 5 books to figure out a fee, and they're all different.
That's been a critical problem for this district since I've been on the board, and why I've...
I believe that's why it's been so difficult for staff to come up with that concise page, knowing that these policies were there on the side, and not knowing how to be able to integrate it. So to remove that necessary integration would be wonderful.
Yeah, it should make it easy for everybody.
Right.
That should be the whole idea.
I think the long-term item on the to-do list is that as the appropriate board committees work their way through the draft ordinance, there needs to be a look at the administrative policies to try and weave them in. And I can tell you for a certainty that perhaps we had a few of those when we drafted the ordinance, but I know we didn't have anywhere near all of them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what we're supposed to be trying to determine at this point is to consider the current district policy of the front footage fees as it relates to this development. We're not on to reviewing all the other things. We're trying to decide what to do with this particular project at this time.
Well, it seems to me that probably the fair thing to do, I tend to agree with council, that since the front footage was paid for the length of front footage on that lot in 2005, apparently, according to the policy that was in effect at the time, it looks to me like that's been paid.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think we have another way of interpreting it.
I don't either.
I did want to go back to that one other item, though, the material, equipment, and labor on the sewer connection charges. It looks like on lot one there was a $1,000 deposit put down, and then we installed the sewer lateral from the sewer line to house one. Is that what we did?
We installed it from the main to
the property line.
Was it just one, or were there three?
There was three.
You installed all three of them.
It cost $3,000 for the partial material.
And did you collect the whole $3,000 at the beginning?
Okay. All the rest out.
But you have agreed to these three charges.
Yes.
But let me ask you, why would you be paying installation on the existing house? I understand the first two, house one and house two, But I don't understand house three.
It's not built yet.
It's not built yet, and it could be a granny unit.
Isn't that the older house
no.
in the back?
No. The older house in the back has its own sewer lateral that comes off of 19th Street, and it's a clay pipe. It's very old.
Yeah, I know about that.
Yeah, but I do have a new sewer lateral should I want to use that one, if I wanted to upgrade or to add a granny unit or a garage or something where I had water and sewer there, if I put a bathroom in there. So, yeah, an itemized bill would be good to show people. I think the thing about this is there's nothing to describe why.
But,
and that goes, if I'm confused, imagine the poor person that comes in here and doesn't have, you know, it's hard.
But
it is very hard.
At this point, though, we're not talking about anything other than your project, this project.
Right. Okay.
You know, let's try to settle that one. Then all these other things would certainly go into when you're doing your codification and making sure that nobody else has these problems in the future.
Yeah. Well, I think we've come to a consensus on this.
Yeah.
So you probably should take action by a motion second to do whatever it is.
To charge those three items.
Yeah.
And that, what is the date of the letter that shows those three items correctly?
There isn't one.
It's May 7th, 2009. It doesn't show it correctly, so you would have to remove the front footage charge, I believe.
Right.
So it would be.
So I will move then that the fees and charges on the May 7th, 2009 letter be instituted with the exception of the front footage fee, and that we find that the front footage fee for that parcel has already been paid.
Second. Just
friendly amendment, not just that parcel, but the additional parcel as well.
Well, we agree the peak rates.
March 18th, what year?
05. But you just said May 7th, 09.
The May 7th, 09 letter is calculated based on our 2006 ordinance establishing fees and charges. So,
but the theory is that the front footage fee has already been paid.
For that length of...
For that footage.
For that footage has already been paid for that property.
Well, can I just throw something out there? Oh, can I play the devil's advocate?
If you'd like.
I never did say that.
That's my thing usually.
The project started before 06. It started in 05. So the policy was not in place.
That's the point.
When the project started.
That's the point.
So
she paid the appropriate front footage fee in 05.
Yes.
And you only have to pay it once.
We're not charging.
So that's why they're not charging it again.
Right. And then the other development came along after the 2006 ordinance, so the fees were calculated appropriately according to the language of that ordinance.
Okay, great. I just wanted to make sure I understood it clearly.
Any comments from the public? Ah, the public awakes.
I understand that we've solved this problem.
Name for the record,
Lynn Hill Oceano. I understand that we're solving this problem. I do have heartburn that no one on the board has bothered to say. Phil has said he's used these old figures. So I think that the board needs to direct staff to go and look at every project from 2006 and make sure it's correct, and we may owe refunds.
We have a motion on the floor. Thank you for your comment. We have a motion on the floor. And a second. Any more discussion from the board? Roll call, please.
Vice President Hill?
Yes.
President Mann?
Yes.
Director Dahl?
Yes.
Director Dean?
She can't vote.
Sorry. Director Lucy?
Yes.
Can I say one other thing?
Sure.
usually there's a house built on the front lot, so he's already paid the rent. If some subdivider comes by and buys 500 feet behind him, because that's what happens to me all the time, then they won't have to pay any footage charge.
So I'm with you on that, Phil.
So go ahead and finish your thought, what you tried to say.
Well, normally what seems like the board was concerned is that they didn't want the people that lived here for 40 years to have to pay for new development. So, you know, this is kind of a reversal from any other board, any previous board, I would say.
I think the real issue there is there needs to be a very clear and careful analysis about what that front footage fee is intended to cover.
Yeah.
Right, and how? And right now that we're doing the codification and Alex's organization has provided a basis for that, it's up to the board to go through and make sure that our policies make sense, that they're equitable, and they cover the various common scenes such as a flag lot. I have seen organizations where, Phil, when you say somebody comes in and buys the 500 feet behind somebody and you know, they're using the same effective front footage, that the district would make a charge of probably 50% of the amount of front footage if there's, you know, 50% for one, 33% for two, 25% for four, and so forth, and then rebate a portion of that to the original payer who's paid for the entire thing already.
But that's not how we have our ordinances.
That's not how our ordinances are currently established, you're right.
So this is
something that we might consider.
This is an issue or a problem. It's like if this lot three on this example here was sold to somebody else, and they developed it, what would they pay for front footage?
Right.
Because in reality, what we're saying is they have no front footage. Or that since it's already been paid by somebody else, there's no charge to them. So, I mean, it is an issue we've got to address.
Clearly.
Did you guys make a note to codification people to?
Oh, yes.
Lots of notes.
We need the policy and files
and
the administration.
I'm trusting that you're going to make use of Phil's expertise in all of this also when you're...
Once we get to the part where we understand enough to ask the proper questions, yes. But I'd like to, you know, I think we both agree that we need, all of us agree that we need to bring in the policy files, administration, and... These are a trip. I mean, you start in with these, and we're going deep, deep underground here. And there's no pun intended. But it's very difficult to get to figure this out because we don't really have clear direction anywhere.
Mary, you had something?
Yeah, you know, I want to respond to what Phil's just said about single family dwellings and larger dwellings and things like that. And I think that that's really very good points, Phil, but I want to point out that on this 46-unit development, their frontage fees were $400 each. And on a single family, the same frontage fees for a single family, or a three-unit, was $7,000. So there is a lot of inconsistencies, but I'm not having a whole lot of sympathy for the larger developers in the area. But there does have to be policies. But, you know, there is a huge discrepancy on what a single family and a large development pays.
But you're comparing rates, that was a rate of 3 years ago or something.
That development was done at $8 a front foot.
'06, they paid $400. In 06, see, even for a single family, in 05, it was $832. So they still got 50% discount. So there is a great discrepancy.
No. The rate was $8 per linear foot, and that applied to all those projects. The difference is the number of linear feet. That's why you have different fees.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just looking at this one that says 46 units at $400 each for front footage charges.
Right, and the front footage was 50 feet. 8 times 50 is the 400.
Which came out to be 18,420.
Because it was before the effective date of the new
ordinance. We'll go through the codifications and make sure it makes sense. Mm-hmm. But I'm just saying it's not fair.
All right, we are now on 9D, board review.
And mainly because the street lighting thing has become a problem, and I wish John Bova had stayed here because he thought it was a good idea to have it come before the board so he could have input also. I'm only looking at the things that the district has responsibility for, and maybe we need to all put our heads together with this before our codes become codified, and it's going to take a while. Maybe these are a good practice tool or something like that to be looking at things and seeing where we want to go. But I'd like to see, all the development review come in. Also, I think it's a good training tool for people out there watching us to kind of know what's involved in a subdivision. Nobody has any idea. Those of us that go through it the first time, you think, I'll never do this again in my life. Because it is so, things just keep coming up that you have never thought of. So that was my idea, that we look at it, that especially during this time when everything's in flux with the codes, that it comes before the board and we review it.
Are you suggesting, if I am understanding right, once you get the codes done, then we will sit down and discuss them as a group? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, I'm thinking yes. Oh, yes.
In other words, not sitting here tonight and talking about these.
No, these would be, as individual developments come through, I'd like to review those and make sure that we have everything in there. And it's a matter of a checklist. Fire roads, fire hydrants, street lights, water connections. So easements in place, and it's a matter of it's like a review. It's kind of like Vern's group does, but they do it for the county with all various different things. For us, it's only a few items to check off.
Shouldn't staff be doing that instead of us doing staff's job?
Staff brings it to us, and I would like to see, because staff is saying they're confused too.
Okay. Well, I was just trying to figure out where you're coming from.
Yeah, it's their job to put the package together, bring it to us, and we look at it and say, yeah, this will work, or something's missing here, or something like that. Streetlights were missing on one recently.
Fire hydrants or something, right?
Fire hydrants, yeah.
And curbs.
Not installed, probably.
Wasn't the road really narrow?
We finished with discussion on that because we would not be doing anything at this time. Am I
understanding? It would be direction to the staff to maybe start doing that. When they get the next development, which is not likely to happen anytime too soon, I guess.
No, it should be pretty quick.
Okay.
Okay, so what are we talking about? Reviewing the projects, reviewing fee letters, reviewing...
Are we becoming a planning department here?
So what are we reviewing?
We're reviewing the size and number, like the water connections, the sewer connections. Does it meet fire codes, which is John Bova's... part, is street lighting necessary and are they in place? Easements, you just look at those, and estimated fees.
To put this in the proper context, it's correct that you're not a planning commission. You don't have discretionary land use approval. It is appropriate that your staff, whether it's the fire department or the water department or the garbage people, they do review these things to determine that they meet the code, that there's adequate turn radiuses, you know, all the safety things are in place, and that the appropriate fees are calculated. So it seems to me, if you want to take a look at these, what you would be asking for is something in the nature of a report on the determination that the people that are charged with the authority to determine these things have reached, so you know what's going on. But I don't think you can take the decision away from them.
Yeah. Kind of like looking at their checklist.
No, it's a review. Yeah. It's a review and a checklist.
Yeah.
And if you see that there could be a problem, maybe you go back and talk to staff, because right now we have no interim general manager, and we don't really have codes that are effective. So I thought in the interim, maybe we should be working together on this, and it would help. I think from everybody's perspective, I don't know, but that was my
comment. Can I say something on this, Barbara?
Sure.
I think it's a great idea if we could just review it, because, like, look what happened to Pierce Street, you know? The Pacific Plan calls for development of Pierce Street. Airport land use canceled out that development. You know, if this board had been just aware of what was happening, you know, maybe there could have been an intervention and we wouldn't have economically suffered.
It will no doubt stretch out the procedure a long amount, and we get a lot of complaints about that already.
That's okay.
I know one time there's been a few times probably, you know, the sore spot that's come up in the past is installation of streetlights, whether we looked at that or not, that type of thing. And then, of course, we've also got the consideration that every time one goes in, our electric bill goes up, too.
So. I don't think it's the cost of the electricity. I think we just need to make sure that the developers the streetlights, right, that they don't say, oh, everybody's going to turn on their porch light, and that's going to take care of it, because even the sheriff's department says that's not adequate.
And improving the property brings in additional property tax that is the cost of the electricity.
So we're kind of looking at, if I understand it right, that whatever your checklist, when it's done, that just gets put in the packet that XYZ was done. Is that what you're looking for, Pamela?
Yeah, I'd just like to see what's done on the project. It should be not a whole review of the engineering, but, you know, just kind of to keep abreast of what's going on. And
so that you'll know what size meter is going in for a 4-unit and what size sewer lateral, because it does change after 6 units.
And it would help us through the code process,
sure,
too, because, you know, We are not knowledgeable with this. It's a high learning curve to wade through this stuff, and then we've got policies now and administrative manual that we really have to coordinate. And I didn't know about policy file. I knew about administrative manual and rules and regs and those kinds of things, but I didn't know about policy files.
So there is a consensus of what we're looking for, correct?
Yes.
Thank you. Any questions or comments from the public on this? If not, move on to old business. No status change, or there's no report. Drainage issues, water and sewer master plan, water and sewer rate studies, review of codification sections, audit for the fiscal year ending June 30th, 2008.
I do have one update for you. Through Muni Temps.
Okay. And we still have some money left.
Right.
In the budget for that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not a regular full-time position, is it?
It's not a district employee.
Okay, that's right.
Okay.
Emma mentioned that we started the codification review process. So
yeah.
At least I'm doing this one.
And we did the sewer codification.
We're not ready for the reports from them
yet.
Reports of district representatives. Special meetings. We had a special meeting last Wednesday. I think I can say staff is. I don't know what I can say about that special meeting. Maybe nothing.
It was a waste.
No. Can I say what we ended up doing?
I don't know what you ended up doing. I wasn't there.
Oh.
We got together.
You can say whatever your announcement was at the end of the meeting.
what the direction to staff was?
Oh, we gave staff direction to place ads in a number of publications looking for a general manager. And to, the other thing was to hire.
Or electronically.
A number of ways we did that. And the second thing was to get the temporary person in to help with the audit. RAC, I wasn't able to attend. The fire committee, I'll let Pamela give the report on that. Moving on to Jim.
Okay, I also attended the special meeting. I attended the sanitation district meeting on June 3rd. I did not bring my notes from that meeting. I'll bring that the next time. The one thing I do recall is we approved the timeline for the budget for the sanitation district to be established, and the next meeting, Wednesday a week from now, will take place at the sanitation district plant, so we can see the budget items being discussed, and those will be melded into the new budget.
Anything else? Director Dahl.
Okay, I already reported on the special meeting. I also had a Zone 1-1A meeting on June 2nd. All of the gates of the levee, the four new ones, are in, so it makes a total of 8. They're submitting permits to the Coastal Commission to work on the levee, on the south levee. The water duct. .org website is basically slocountywater.org, and then follow the links to the Zone 1-1A area. And what they're looking for is any kind of impacts, any kind of things that will be a problem or need to be dealt with once they start the actual work on the cleaning out the waterway. They expect, at the very earliest, they expect the construction to start around July or August of 2011 with sediment removal. And that's pretty much what our meeting was. So, 1-1A.
Thank you. Director Dean?
Fire Committee, I think John Volva handled most of that. And we have the template or the pamphlet for the fire booths, fireworks sale booths. And we had people there from the Rio Grande High School band boosters. This is their first year of doing that. So they had a lot of questions, and I think they got every question answered very well for them. Mm-hmm. And they were pleased that they came. John Bova talked about talked about the JPA. He says they're working forward with that, and Steve Adams is okay with that financial input, which was good news. He said the application we know has gone in for the Type 1 equipment, and the grants are kept in the binder here in the OCSD office, so that directors can get a copy if they wish, and we were going to get one made for Mary Lucy, who had requested one. And he wanted to thank the board for allowing him to apply for the grants. And we're thanking him for writing the grants, because we think we have a non-compliant Type 1 vehicle. He said the federal people will be looking at in with favor upon those non-compliant vehicles, replacement vehicles. So he thinks we have a good chance, and we're all crossing our fingers that we get that. The RFP, he's working on it. He had no template, but he worked.
It was scheduled for 6:30.
Oh, it's scheduled for 6:30.
Is that Oceano Advisory Night?
Which item? Sorry, for your question.
June 15th, is
that? That's the advisory council.
Well, then the fire people, we told them that perhaps they would have to use Kevin's office.
Correct. And I talked with Captain Bolva this morning about that.
Okay. So June 15th, 6:30, the fireworks booth standards will be on. And that's it.
Thank you. Director Lucy.
I'm just working on the codification with Pamela. on sewer, learning a lot. It's very valuable information. And I think it could be well worth it when we're all done.
Thank you.
I have one more thing.
Yes.
We do have an advisory council meeting on the 15th, this coming Monday, and we'll be reviewing some of the stuff that may have, that the subcommittee may have come up with as far as impacts and continue on with that in the beach area. And also on the Zone 11A, the vegetation removal in the creek is going to be happening again this summer. They expect to start thinning the vegetation on July 6th and ending around August 15th. They'll be using the Santa Maria CCCs, California Conservation Corps, and that's going to be for 6 weeks. And then starting July 27th through August 15th, they'll be using the San Luis Obispo Conservation Corps for 3 weeks to remove invasive species of vegetation, which would be the arundo grass, or castor bean, and pomegranate. That's it.
Pampas?
Pampas, I'm not sure which
pampas
one.
Pampas is not native?
Not in the creek, I don't know.
But it's native to California.
And those are the species that they're going to try to remove out of the creek.
You
could
sell it to their rosemary.
Mm-hmm. Do you have something, Jane?
No, I was just wondering about the goats. No goats this year?
No goats this year?
No goats this year.
They didn't have the money to pay to rent the goats, probably.
No.
Well, that was prior to the 218 situation where they passed to get additional funding. But they're not using the goats because they have to use the California Conservation Corps to fit out the willows and
right.
You know,
yeah.
Heavy brush and teeth. That's something that they'll work on getting that permission and working on that area after that comes in.
For the people of Oshetta, you know, that's really a great little river walk. And we have a beaver and its family down in there now.
Okay, we have several beavers and your family and beaver dams down there. But as far as it being a great walk, you got to remember that people are not able to go down into that creek to walk in there because there's endangered species.
No, and not also, in the creek.
And the levees are privately owned, yeah. So you're trespassing if you're going up there. That's the reason a lot of the gates have been put up, is because of the amount of trespass.
So you're saying that you can't walk over to the bridge and then walk down anymore along the creek? Does that mean the horses can't go down through there anymore either? Because they come up by the strands. Is that what we're saying?
No, what I'm saying is it's private property down there, so a lot of that is private property. And so unless you're the owner or have permission from the owner, you're not supposed to be on the property.
I think where the horses go, they have to be. You're talking about the stables.
Yeah, and people walk along that path all the time. And, you know, so if it's private property, then people need to know it's private property.
Mm-hmm. And there's a light gate up across it, too. From walking and driving, a lot of problems with, you know, more.
Well, I think we're talking about a different area.
Yeah. Yeah.
People don't drive where I'm driving.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Anything else?
When is the next fire release thing?
Friday.
3:00.
I'll be both if you want to attend. So, you know,
it's a big one this Friday.
Yeah, I will be here. All right. We're going to adjourn to closed session.
Madam President, is it your intention to pull any of the items?
Yes. I would like to pull the evaluation of the district legal counsel. I would like to pull the... Oh, I might want to say a word. We might want to say a word about B just to bring council up to date. We need to talk about C, a minute.
6, to meet and confer with the district's designated representative to consider compensation and benefits to its represented employees. The district's designated representative is interim manager Kevin Walsh. and under consideration is the fire department's MOU. And finally, under item 11D, it would be a closed session pursuant to government code section 54956.9D to meet with the agency's legal counsel concerning pending litigation, and the litigation being Santa Maria groundwater litigation, Santa Clara County lead case number CV770214.
We're now in closed session. Returning from closed session, Alex.
Yes, Madam President, members of the board, members of the public. With regard to item 11B, a closed session pursuant to government code section 54957B1 to consider the appointment or employment of a public employee, the position under consideration being that of the general manager. The board received a report. No action was taken. With regard to item 11C, a closed session pursuant to government code section 54957.6 to meet and confer with the district's designated representative to consider compensation and benefits to its represented employees. The matter under consideration being the fire department's MOU. The board met and reached a determination on direction to be given to its designated representative, and the board determined to change the designated representative for purposes of the fire department's MOU to district legal counsel. With regard to item 11D, a closed session pursuant to government code section 54956.9B to meet with the agency's legal counsel concerning pending litigation, the case being Santa Maria groundwater litigation, Santa Clara County lead case number CV770214, the board received a report. No action was taken.
Thank you. It's 2 minutes to 10. Entertain a motion to go a few minutes longer.
I move that we continue past 10 o'clock.
I second that.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Interim general manager items for discussion. Since he isn't here, Gina Grant
Writer, we have the agreement back to Mr. Randall. And we're waiting to hear from him. He had told us that there were some grants coming up that he thought would be of interest to us, and he'll keep us posted. That's it.
Anything else?
No.
Any questions of Gina?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Board item members for discussion. We'll start down at your end this time, Mary.
I have nothing exciting to report today.
Vern?
Nothing.
Jim?
No.
Pamela?
Mm-mm.
I have nothing either. Consideration of the warrants. Any comments from the public? Seeing none, consideration of the warrants?
I pulled two warrants. One was for a director where we had paid him for a committee meeting in error. The second was there are two checks in your packet for the city of Grover Beach. One is the normal dispatching. The other is one for $664 and change, and it should have been $64 for some shift calendars.
Oh, that was office supplies.
Yes. Both of those are being corrected, and they'll be reflected on the next summary.
Okay.
I move that we accept the warrants.
And pay them.
Pay the
bill. I second that.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Public comment. Last public comment of the evening. Seeing none. Any written communications received after the board?
No.
I declare this meeting adjourned.
1 minute after.